kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
And guys, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's get after it this hour on the program. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. And welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Wherever you get your podcasts, it's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you. And we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Got a busy hour ahead for you on Flames Talk this hour, including our goaltending guru, Kevin Woodley. He's set to join us midway through this hour. We'll take a look at some Flames goaltending questions, but on top of that, around the NHL and including the Vancouver Canucks and the continued mess that remains. But this hour is all about goaltending. It's a little goaltending hour with Pat and Wes. First of all, hi Wes, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. And the first half of our goaltending hour is going to be filled by the director of goaltending for the Calgary Flames. Jordan Sigalette joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline because goaltending has been a pretty hot topic around these parts. And the guy who oversees it all is with us now. Hello, Siggy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. I know it's been a fun little stretch for Flames fans seeing number 32 go about his business, and he's on a red hot roll. But Siggy, I remember we had you on the day after Dustin Wolf made his. If you're gonna be
proud of him, yeah,
you might as well be Jordan Wolf. But the day after Dustin made his debut a couple of seasons ago, we had you on, and you were like a proud papa that day. How much fun are you having watching Dustin go about his business in his first full NHL year?
Yeah, it's been exciting, but you know, none of us are really surprised by it. I know there's always been questions about size and that, but we've always thought, you know, the IQ and the skating, the athletic ability always outweighed, you know, the size he has and is, and he's starting to prove that. He's always been a bit of a slow starter, no matter what league he's been in, and, you know, he's a smart enough kid that, you know, he starts to learn the league and get acclimated and, you know, really start to excel. So starting to see it a little bit now, and it's obviously a learning curve as a young kid still, but it's nice to see him in the net more and more and having success.
Yeah, but is he too small, Siggy? Like, or can we finally put that one to bed?
I put that one to bed a long time ago, but I'm sure there will always be the doubters, but you never hear about anyone saying someone's too tall out there, so maybe we'll start hearing that soon.
Yeah, exactly.
Siggy, I know you said you're not surprised, you know, nobody around the Saddle Dome is maybe surprised by the overall body of work, but any little pieces surprise you? Like, is there anything that you've maybe learned about Dustin in his first full season at the NHL level?
Well, the things you just keep seeing at every level he's at is his ability to bounce back after, I guess you could call it a bad game. He doesn't have many, but you're so used to him playing at an elite level that even when he has an average game, it feels like a bad game. But his ability, you know, like going from St. Louis to Winnipeg, we've seen that so many times throughout his career in the American Hockey League. And it's kind of a different situation at the start of this year where he didn't really get that chance because they were kind of in a rotation. And, you know, if he had an off night or even a good game, then it was Vladdy's turn. So they kind of went back and forth. So it's nice to see him, you know, get that chance in Winnipeg the other night to play that second game. And he just kind of knew what was coming because we've seen it so much with his time, you know, in the American Hockey League and the Western Hockey League as well.
What's the secret sauce on the bounce back? What allows him to regroup, if that's the right word, reset, whatever you want to call it, after one of those rare outings where he's maybe not thrilled with his performance?
It's just his demeanor, his mental toughness. You know, he wants to get back out there and prove everyone wrong, because anytime there's a goal through traffic or somewhat of a bad game, that's when the doubters come out again, and he doesn't give him time to, you know, build on that. He wants to prove him wrong, get back out there, have another good game, and get back in the win column. And, you know, nothing phases him. He's unflappable, and it's a rare thing to have. And, you know, he's had it his whole career, his whole time here.
Does that that unflappable part, and I know you're speaking to the kind of on-ice part, but, you know, I sort of wonder from my vantage point, okay, well, how does a young guy deal with Calder Trophy hype, for example, right? People are starting, everyone is talking now about Dustin Wolf. Does that unflappable part kind of go to the off-ice for you as well?
Yeah, totally. Like, there's so many distractions as a young goalie, and whether it's media talking about the success you're having, or if you're too small to play, you know, there's always a focal point, and, you know, he's just always just focused on that next game, that next shot, and, you know, even off the ice, like, he's such a laid-back guy, he's an accountable guy, and he takes a lot of pride in, you know, his practices every day, and, you know, what he brings to that dressing room, and, you know, he wants to be the best, and he does it in a very humble way, which is nice to see.
Jordan, when you came into this season and we knew that Dustin was going to be one of the two goalies, we knew it was going to be Dustin and Dan to start the year. Can you give us a little bit of insight in terms of how you went about choosing the spots for Dustin to play and how you went about kind of looking at his workload, especially in the first half of this season?
Yeah, a lot of that comes down to, obviously, Jason LaBarbera and Ryan Huska and their coaching staff. But, you know, we meet all the time. I talk with the goalie guys all the time. And really, it was just getting both guys in the mix early, you know, splitting that first 10 to 15 games. So both guys got their feet under them. And unfortunately, some nights it led to some tough spots for Dan, you know, getting a back-to-back or getting, you know, a high-end team. And some of the other games, maybe a little bit on the lesser workload for Dustin, but you know, both guys want to be number ones, and if you want to be a number one in this league, you got to play in those situations. So I think it was just great having two young guys with little experience to push each other and make each other better, but at the same time supporting each other. It's been fun to see.
How mindful were you, or do you even continue to be? You're mindful of this with any goalie, but with a guy who's never played this type of NHL workload before and has never been a full-time guy in this league of you know, monitoring fatigue levels and workload and all that type of stuff. Like, how mindful is your goaltending group on that when it comes to Dustin specifically?
Yeah, you want to keep your eye on that with anyone, whether it's a goalie, starting goalie, backup goalie, you know, forward defense. I think he's been pretty battle-tested. He's played a ton of games in the American League, played a lot of back-to-backs, you know, while he was there, and going back to his time in Everett, like, he was a workhorse. So I know it's a little bit harder games now, but, you know, travel can be tough, but he's just got to manage his body, manage his rest, you know, being, you know, a lighter guy. And but, you know, we're always talking to those guys and talking to the medical staff and athletic therapists and everybody, just, you know, get a read on everyone's, you know, fatigue levels and rest and energy. So.
And yet, at the same time, you know that he's taken on big-time workloads before in the American League and in the Western League. That obviously comes into the equation and the thought process, too, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it does for sure. And that's not easy travel either when you're, you know, flying around the American Hockey League. You're not on a charter plane. You're in the Western League on buses as a young kid. So, you know, he's been through a lot of, you know, like I said, battle tested, and I think it's prepared him really well for where he's at now.
We're chatting with Jordan Sigalet. He is the Calgary Flames Director of Goaltending, joining us here on Flames Talk to kick off the hour. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, along with you on a Thursday, Wes.
Jordan, you are, as Pat just said, the Director of Goaltending and not just the Director of Dustin Wolf. So let's ask you about some of the other guys as well. It's been a tough stretch, I know, results-wise for Dan Vladar, who hasn't had a victory in a while. But what's been your assessment of Dan's play so far this season?
Yeah, I know the numbers don't reflect it, but I think Dan's had a pretty solid year when he's been put in the net. Lately, he hasn't got the goal support. But I think his game has really matured on and off the ice. And similar to how Marky was to him the last little bit, you know, he's being that mentor now for Dustin, which is great to have. But I think if he keeps putting that game on the table that he's been, you know, putting out there lately, he's going to start getting the results. You know, just got to find the back of the net for him. And, you know, instead of losing 2-1, hopefully you're winning 2-1 or 3-2. But really like what he's done so far this year. And those two as a pair, you know, really pushed each other. And, you know, sometimes Dan, you know, he's getting the tougher starts out of those two.
If you don't mind sort of peeling back the curtain on that mentorship part, it's such an interesting dynamic. You know, you have two goalies on the roster. They're both trying to, they both like to start every single game. And so when you talk about Dan and, you know, in addition to making his case for more starts, mentoring Dustin, what can you kind of, you know, peel it back and tell us a little bit about how that relationship works?
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you want to be on a successful team, you got to have two goalies that support each other and push each other and make each other better in practice and make your teammates better just from your compete level, you know, when you're not in games and you're on the ice. And that's one way to earn your teammates' respect and your coach's respect and trust. And those two guys battle like, you know, anyone I've ever seen. So it's nice to have two competitive guys. But again, when one's in the net, the other one's there, you know, pushing for success from the other guy and just ready for their next start. I think that's the only way to have success in this league is to have two guys going and two guys that push each other like that.
You know, and there's been a lot made about Dustin's workload, Jordan, here, and it has been pretty heavy over the last month or so, but it feels like the door's been left open when Ryan Huska's talked about this. I would imagine as the goaltending department, like, doors open for Vladar to go on a run too. If all of a sudden he gets red hot, it's not like he won't have the opportunity to get on a nice little stretch of games too. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, totally. I think that's the only fair way to do it. You know, you're going to earn your starts and earn the net. And it's not that he hasn't played good enough to be in there either, but just the little role Dustin's been on lately and the confidence he has right now, you know, take advantage of that while you can.
Tell us about the kind of third guy in this NHL conversation right now. Devin Cooley got recalled when Dustin was sick a little while back. Didn't get into a game, but Devin Cooley continues. I know he's on the shelf right now and is close to returning, but boy, he continues to have a great year in the American League. Some of the best numbers in that league right now. Tell us about what you've seen from Devin Cooley and how much he's kind of lived up to or even exceeded expectations from when your group brought him in over the summer.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. And you know what? Like, we knew he was good, but I'll be the first to say it. I didn't know he was going to be this good. But credit to him and Mackenzie Skapski, because they both just, you know, built that relationship quick, and Devin bought into what Mackenzie was bringing to the table and started applying it right away. And just the difference you could notice in Devin's game from playing a little bit deeper and calmer and playing within the posts. Like, it was just a total revamp of the way he was playing with that 6'5" frame. And he's played 27 games now this year already, and that's more games than he's ever played on a pro team in his career. So it's pretty funny, you know, how not battle tested he is and how, you know, raw he still is, because he hasn't played that much. He's always been a little bit buried where he's been, and this was the first time in his pro career he'd ever played a back-to-back game, and he got his first American Hockey League shutout this year, and that's one of three he has. So it's exciting to watch, and they miss him right now being injured, but he should be back, and he's a big piece of that team.
How much does this workload and playing like is the no questions asked number one with the Wranglers? How big is that for him as he continues to develop here?
Well, I think it was huge for him signing here in the first place. You know, we showed the belief in him. You know, he knew it was going to be his net and he was going to play a ton. And then to have that one-way contract the second year, just again, it showed how much we thought of him as a goalie and a person. And I credit him, though. Like, he's put in the work, and he's been a great teammate, and, you know, he's getting to play, you know, a lot of hockey, and he's getting rewarded for it.
Jordan, every time I get a press release about the AHL All-Star Classic, there's a long list of alumni at the bottom. Like, they like to build up the event by saying, here's some guys who've played in this All-Star game in years past, and there are a lot of really good goalies on that list. I'm not going to ask you specifically about the All-Star game, but when you look at a guy like Cooley, or maybe it was Dustin Wolf a couple of years ago, what indicators are you looking for that AHL success can eventually translate to NHL success?
Well, you're looking for guys that you know, can play with pace with the way the AHL and NHL is today. Like, you got to be able to move out there and keep up with the play and the athletic ability that both those guys have. I know they're completely different size and built guys, but they both, like Devin Cooley at 6'5", moves like Dustin Wolf at, but it's 5'11½", 6 foot. So it's like super impressive to see a big guy move like that. And some of the things you see in those guys before you get them is, you know, what do they have that's coachable and what's not coachable. And the stuff that was coachable with Cools was obviously, you know, just a bit of structure and calming his game down. And that was McKenzie's job and Jason's job to obviously target that. And, but you got to have the goaltender to buy in and be coachable too. And, those guys are both super coachable guys.
When we had Cooley on a couple weeks ago after he was named the All-Star game, he said he's been telling McKenzie Skapski if he gets a big contract someday, he's going to buy him a Rolex. Does the director of goaltending get in on that deal?
I don't know. I might have to get one for both my wrists.
You get a Timex.
Yeah, I got a pocket.
One of the waterproof ones, though. One of the waterproof
yeah,
ones.
You can dive in those things.
No, he gets all the credit for that because he's done the work with them. I just, you know, I have a vision of what the guy can be, but, you know, it's those coaches on the ice that mold those guys. And at the end of the day, like I said, if the goalie's not willing to believe in it and buy into it and trust the goalie coach, then, you know, you don't have that two-way street and it's never going to happen.
So we're expecting Cooley back here pretty quick, like not much longer until he's able to return?
Yeah, if all goes well, I expect him to back up, you know, at least one of the games this weekend for the Wranglers and get him back in the net soon. So as long as everything goes well, but he's on track to be back here soon.
How happy are you, though? I mean, all of a sudden, the Wranglers lose the number one goalie in most metrics in the American League, and stepping right in, Ignatiev gets elevated, and Connor Murphy comes up from Rapid City, and Wranglers still winning games and getting some really positive performances from those two goalies. How happy are you to see and proud of you of both Ignatiev and Murphy and what they've been able to do?
Yeah, their roster is quite depleted right now. Just got the chance to go down to San Diego and Ontario to see them on the road, and they each started a game, and both little high-scoring games, not a goalie coach's dream, but, you know, they were finding ways to get wins, and when they're missing a lot of guys to Calgary with call-ups and some injuries and suspensions, so they're grinding it out, and it's good for those guys to get, you know, all those games they can and get the experience, and it's only going to help them long-term, but both have a lot of positives in their game, and, you know, both have a lot of work to do still, but definitely seeing improvement in both their games over the year here.
Did you manage to build in a work trip to watch Arseny Sergeyev at Wrigley Field?
I missed that one, but I got to watch it on video, but I'm heading down with McKenzie Skapski on February 7th to see him at Wisconsin for a couple games, so. Got to see him earlier in the year in Minnesota and excited to see him again. He's been having a strong year, missed about 2.5-3 weeks with an injury, but besides that, he's played every single game they've played. So he's at 15 starts, one shy of his total from last year already. So that was the goal for us when he transferred to Penn State. And, you know, wanted them to play more, and they gave him that opportunity, and he's earned it. So it's exciting for him right now, too.
A seventh round pick in 2021, now in his third NCAA season, as you said. What sticks out about Arseny? What sticks out about the skills or what he brings to the crease?
You know what? It's almost similar to Devin Cooley. Like, when we drafted him, we just saw the athleticism, the raw ability, the IQ is there. Like, the kid is so powerful in his crease and so athletic, and almost relied on it too much when we drafted him out of the North American Hockey League. But now, you know, with good coaching he's got at UConn and Penn State, he's calmed his game down a lot like Devin Cooley has. He's still got a little bit of ways to go, but you can see his game maturing, developing. And, you know, if he can put it all together and just, you know, play that calmer, more patient style and just rely on the athletic ability when he needs to, there's a lot of, you know, scary raw talent there with Arseny.
I go and take a look at the two goalies. You got a couple of goalies playing in the Russian MHL right now. Third round pick this year. I know how stoked you were when you were able to get Kirill Zarubin in the third round in Vegas, and then the year prior in Nashville it was Igor Igorov. You go take a look at those numbers that both guys are putting up right now. They look pretty good. You got what, a 921 and a 934 for Igorov and Zarubin respectively in the MHL. Tell us a little bit more about how they're progressing, even though I know that they're a long ways away.
Yeah, they're both 19 right now. Zarubin's had a really strong year. Started off a little bit slow, but as of late, he's really taken off and hasn't played as much this year. I think he's at 14 or 15 games now. They have an older starter there who's been also playing very well. And then Kirill left for about 10 days to join the Russian national team. He was one of three goalies to be at that camp, and then missed a bit of time with some illness. But when he's been in the net, you know, he gives that team a chance to win, and communicate with them, you know, almost every other day, just going over video with myself and McKenzie and him just to help him out. His English is getting a lot better. But, you know, there's been interest from teams over here about possibly bringing him over, whether it's to play in the CHL or the NCAA and USHL. And Igorov's getting the same right now, too. So we have to make some decisions on those guys, you know, for the next season here, if we want to keep them in Russia or give them a chance somewhere in the USHL or CHL or college hockey. So it's exciting, and it'll be good to get those guys over.
That's good insight, as always, Mr. Sigalet. Appreciate the time. I know it's been a good year for your goaltending group, so continued good luck in that regard, and thanks for spending some time with us on this Thursday afternoon. Appreciate it, as always, hey?
Yeah, appreciate it, too. Hopefully one day I'll get the Guru tab title like Woodley there, so.
You got to work for that, okay?
You got friend of the program's not bad. Like, he could have said acquaintance, so not too much complaining.
All right, guys. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
soon.
Jordan.
Be well. Thanks, Jordan. Jordan Sigalet is the director of goaltending for the Calgary Flames. A little goaltending hour this hour on Flames Talk, and he joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This hour rolls on. It's a little bit of a goaltending power hour. We had Jordan Sigalet, the director of goaltending for the Calgary Flames, to kick off this hour. And now our goaltending guru is Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us on the Atlas Beats and Sports Bar guest hotline to keep talking goaltending. Hello, Mr. Woodley. How are you?
I'm good. Sorry. And it just cut out for a second there. Did you say that you had Jordan Sigalet on?
We did. He came on just before you.
Wow. Like, I feel like I should just hang up now. There's a guy I have a ton of respect for in terms of what he's done as a goaltender, actually, and as a person as well. I've known Jordan since, you know, since actually getting to meet his family when he was doing a lot of fundraising while he was at Bowling Green and afterwards for MS in the area here. And so I feel like you've got all the goaltending expertise, the real stuff, already, and now it's time for the fraud hour with Kevin Woodley trying to play catch-up. So I feel like I'm set up here. What's going on?
Kevin, we're not trying to pick fights for you, but Jordan did take a little bit of umbrage with us calling you the goalie guru and not calling him a guru, and so you might have to smooth things over. That Pat made that mess for you.
I appreciate that. He's absolutely right. However, and without having any idea what the Flames pay the people in their department, I'm willing to bet that he'll settle for the difference in our check.
That might be fair. Hey, we talked with Jordan a lot about Dustin Wolfe and the way things have gone for him. One thing that we talked about last week when you were on, and you said you had a little bit of a homework assignment. It was kind of the conditions that were leading to the, you know, half a goal per game more the Flames are scoring with Dustin Wolfe in net compared to when Dan Vladar starting. What did some of that homework assignment end up yielding for you?
Okay, so I feel like most teachers would mark this homework assignment incomplete. I do have some numbers for you, but in digging them up, I realized they only made me want to dig further. And yet, in typical me fashion, I did so without enough time to dig further. And this, folks, is a lesson in how you end up being a journalist instead of, you know, going to school for better occupations. The interesting thing is when I looked at ClearSight Analytics in terms of expected goals for, because what I wondered was, like, sometimes you just convert at a different rate. Maybe it was just that the goalies they were going against, they weren't actually creating more offense. What if I told you that in Dustin Wolf's game, they were generating exactly 3.04 expected goals for, and in Dan Vladar's starts, it's 2.4925. In other words, that half a goal actual output matches what they're generating. Huh. So it left me thinking two things. One, man, have the ClearSight Analytics nailed it in terms of what their expected goals ultimately lead to in terms of actual goals, because they're kind of matched. And two, I now want to dig in further. I feel like we got to, you know, I'm asking for an extension, I guess is what I'm saying, as I did for so many of my professors over the years, because I feel like I want to dig in and see how much of this is volume, how much of it is high danger. Certainly when you have more confidence in a guy, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. I kind of cautioned against reading too much into that last week, but might you try and generate more off the rush? So I want to take a look at that discrepancy and see if I can find out what kind of scoring chances are leading to it. And therefore, you know, again, at the end of the day, it may all come up being there's nothing to it. It's a small sample still. These things happen. But maybe there's even more that we can dig into here. But right now, it kind of just matches the results. Huh. They're scoring more for Dustin because they're generating more for Dustin. What I haven't been able to get down to is what types of chances and can we read anything, you know, into that in terms of the why.
Interesting. No, that homework assignment, I give you a gold star, and you've passed the test. So well done on that front. You know, it's funny, the Calder buzz around Dustin Wolf has been there basically all season. But more and more, whether it's Flames fans or other people, it's like, okay, what about Vezina buzz? Like, could Dustin Wolf find himself in the Vezina Trophy conversation? So I'll ask our goalie guy, like, how legit are those conversations? Is there anything to that?
Well, I think at this point in the season, the conversations probably start and end, although I'm going to give you another name that needs to be in the mix, but right now they probably start and end with Connor Hellebuck because his first half was so sensational. And we talked about it last week. Like, anytime you get to the halfway point of season and you've got as many shutouts as you do regulation losses, like, that's remarkable. And yet I also talked about the difference in the environment in terms of, you know, just how good the Winnipeg Jets are defensively for Connor Hellebuck. And so, you know, that's why we have adjusted numbers and sort of that shows up in there. At the very least, Dustin is in the conversation. When we talk about expected goals against and performance relative to it, we use a stat called goals saved above expected. And ClearSight uses the same stat. They call it goals against differential. Obviously using, you know, I believe better and more complete, especially from a goalie perspective, data. And Dustin's fifth in the entire National Hockey League right now at just a sliver under 15 goals saved above expected. The only guys ahead of him on the list, and just barely right now and headed in the wrong direction of late, is Filip Gustavsson in the Minnesota Wild, the aforementioned Hellebuck, Igor Shesterkin, and number one in the NHL right now, despite fewer shots, because don't forget, goals saved above expected is a cumulative stat, is Logan Thompson. Now, Thompson and Wolf have played about the same, or at least seen about the same amount of chances. They're within four of each other. And Logan Thompson is actually 10 goals clear of Wolf in terms of goals saved above expected. So is Wolf in the conversation, especially given it's GMs that vote and there's a narrative element to it? Absolutely. His 15 goals saved above expected is actually only three back of Connor Hellebuck right now. But it's 10 back of Logan Thompson, who is starting to make a case for this not necessarily being the one-horse race that I presented with Hellebuck the last time we talked. In fact, on a sort of per-shot basis, and that's where I like to use save percentage differential. So in other words, how you're performing, sort of your save percentage relative to what the average would be based on the shot quality. Wolf has passed Connor Hellebuyck since we talked last week at plus 2.2%. And again, the only guys ahead of him, Stolarz is still up there, but his sample is increasingly falling behind everyone else. Darcy Kuemper is up there. He's having a hell of a season. And then the names I mentioned, Logan Thompson right now, you know, not to switch this over, but hey, another Calgary guy, right? Logan Thompson's adjusted save percentage at plus 3.7% on an environment where the expected for him is 881 compared to 897 for Hellebuyck and even 887 for Wolf. Logan Thompson's numbers are in the territory of what Igor Shesterkin did the year we were talking about the Hart Trophy and being a legitimate nominee. Like, that's how good Calgary native Logan Thompson is playing for the Washington Capitals right now.
But that's all before opposing teams realized if you just chuck some nachos on the ice, can distract them. So that could change things.
They have found a new way. That is a new one. As a matter of fact, I've already sent a note to Steve Valiquette. I need it logged in.
Yeah.
I need a new stat created in ClearSight Analytics. What happens? We've got six different types of screens that goalies have to deal with. What about the nacho distraction? I want to know where that ranks on save difficulty.
It's a good point. Kev, now that we're seeing less and less of Dan Vladar, does it change at all what you might focus on in his starts, what you'll really be looking for as indicators with him?
It's a good question. The job gets harder, right? Like, the job gets much harder. Goaltending, I view it on a spectrum. Like, it's not just an overall spectrum, but like, every goalie has different strengths and weaknesses and different things they rely on, you know, to different degrees. It's a pendulum and each aspect places in a different spot. That's what I love most about the position. Nobody has the same mix, and there is no one right mix of every asset or every skill that leads to success. But one of the ones that you look for is, you know, how much are they sort of technical foundation, positioning, spot to spot, and how much movement is there in their game, whether it's in and out or, you know, with a little bit of backwards flow and a little bit of retreat. Anytime you go from the sort of more technical positional over to the extra movement and you swing that way, it tends to rely a little more on rhythm and timing and feel. Because inherently, the more you're moving, the less margin for your error you have in terms of getting caught moving in the wrong direction or moving one way when the play goes the other or moving yourself out of position on flow plays. I think as a general statement, guys who are more on the positional and technical end of the spectrum manage those gaps, that role, better than a rhythm and flow goalie because they rely a little less on feel. And so in that regard, I think that Vladar is positioned well. I'm not saying it's easy because it's not for any goalie to sit for long periods, but probably better positioned than a goalie who's got a ton of extra movement in their game and, you know, really needs to feel the game to have success. Like, Vladar has, I think it's part of why he has a high floor, right? Because he's always sort of, he's not going to take himself out of position. And I think that foundation will serve him well in a role that is, I think a lot of people don't realize just how tough it is when you're not playing very often. And you got to lean on the goalie coach to help you find the drills. Because you never replicate a game, but can you find the drills in practice? And Jason LaBarbera is really good at this, depending on the guy and what his skill set is, but find the drills in practice that will make him feel good about his game, feel good about that rhythm and timing, even when he's not getting to play real games.
Just in case any of our listeners have missed an episode of everyone's favorite soap opera, Days of Our Canucks Lives, what is the latest out there?
Well, hold on. Let me check Twitter. Let me refresh that because it's been 5 minutes since we started talking, right? Like, that's how fast it changes. It's not good. As the kids would say, the vibes kind of suck around here.
And the vibes are not immaculate.
They are not. They are far from immaculate. And I think I've talked to you guys about this. Like, I'm coming up on my 25th anniversary next month of my first time covering a game in this league. And it's actually a really easy one to remember because my first time covering a game for the Associated Press was the night the McSorley whacked Brashear. So anniversaries for me are really easy to remember. Yeah, trial by fire, Wes. Try that one on deadline for your first one out of college. But in 25 years, and so that means, don't forget, I was here for the days of Messier and Harry York being on the third line. Look that name up. It, you know, it was ugly back then. And so maybe I've had too many pucks off the head and I'm not remembering clearly, but I can't remember in 25 years a more negative feel around a locker room. And maybe some of that is because the only time I'm in that locker room is when we, the media, are in it. And there has very much become an us against them mentality. I do think there are a lot of guys on this team that are far too consumed and spend far too much time thinking about and trying at times to even correct what the Fifth Estate is doing and how they cover this team. But it's a really negative vibe. And part of it is how the room has changed and how we do our business in the media. Again, Wes, you know what, you guys know what this is like. Used to be going there and you had conversation with guys. And the way they set things up, I think in general, this is around the league, but in particular here, like it's a lot of, you know, name on the board, who you want to talk to today. Everybody talks to the same guy and it feels like a firing squad at the front of the room with all the cameras gathered around, as opposed to wandering from locker to locker because they were all in there and actually being able to have conversations on and off the record.
Right.
To sort of get a better feel. Like, that's disappeared. And I think that's created some of this animosity that is clearly there between them and our side of things. So the vibes are not great. It's hard to miss the difference between this team last year and this team this year. They're, you know, they've admitted, it's not like anybody's making anything up about those vibes, about the locker room. Talkett has admitted that the noise is in there, that it has affected how some guys are playing. So yeah, in terms of what happens, I mean, again, like I'll defer to both the insiders who have the scoops, and have sources with other teams around the league. It sounds like, you know, there was a deal close to getting done on Saturday involving the Rangers. It sounds like the Rangers are still involved, but it also sounds like a team that seemed to think it was really set down the middle with Elias Pettersson and JT Miller as a 1-2 punch, and hoping to build off what that core did last year, is all of a sudden facing the very real possibility of having to move on from Miller and at a discount, because everyone knows they have to move on. So the specifics, there's been a lot of speculation, a lot of talk about the relationship with Pettersson. And as I've told you guys before, that's not news. And I don't know that that's necessarily gotten worse or changed. It's just always been a thing. But why all of a sudden, is it the sole reason that this needs to happen now? Or is there more to it than that with this player? My hunch is there's more to it than that with this player. And the sense is the organization feels that something has to happen as well. And I think that's why you've got so much information getting out about their efforts to move on. It seems from JT Miller, where it leaves them once they do is going to be really interesting. Because if they're not getting back anything similar, and it sure doesn't sound like they will, and if they're not able to take the assets they do get back and turn that into something similar, you know, this, it would appear they're headed for a further step back from what has already been a step back for an organization that after 10 years of mediocrity finally looked like it was ready to step forward. And that's going to be tough for a fan base that has been waiting for that success. They'd endured massive price increases once they got the first taste of it to swallow and accept.
Kev, before we let you go, there's a couple minutes left, but tell us about your latest on NHL.com that's coming out on Friday.
We're talking about traffic and tips and mostly just finding pucks through traffic. I've always sort of known how difficult it is in the NHL. We've talked about it before, the interplay with net front screen guys and power plays, you know, trying specifically to move the goalie in one direction as a shot is headed the other, or forcing a goalie to look around a screen just as a shot is being released. You know, with ClearSet Analytics, I mentioned earlier, they have six different types of screens that they measure. Well, some of them go in more often on a point shot with a certain type of screen or a one-timer with a certain type of screen, go in more often than a breakaway. And so I got into it with the goalies, especially young goalies, and they agreed that it's the biggest adjustment they have to make to playing in the NHL, which I think makes Wolf's season that much more impressive when you consider he's doing this at 6 foot, because one of the things a lot of the other guys told me is, hey, I at least I'm 6'4", 6'5". I get to look over the traffic, not a luxury that he enjoys. It's harder than it's ever been. And so we just kind of get into why, what makes it so difficult, and some of the methods that we're seeing that goalies are managing, and how teams continue to sort of pile on and counteract it with that interplay I discussed. If everybody was forced to watch more games from sort of the camera, and in Vegas they do this with their broadcast a lot, they use a camera behind the net, I think that would give you a sense of just how bloody difficult it is to find a puck for a goalie in today's NHL. When we're watching it from the usual broadcast on the side of the rink, it's almost impossible to sort of really see how tough it is. It's become a type of scoring chance that I'm not sure. And as Uka Pekka Luukkonen, who you'll see tonight, said to me, I don't think anybody understands how hard it is unless you've actually been a goalie.
Yeah.
And in the NHL, because not until he got there did he realize not just the intensity, but the purposefulness of traffic. So we dig into that with some anecdotes. And I think it actually, like I said, adds another exclamation point to just how well Dustin Wolf has managed this season.
Kev, as always, great insight, my friend. We'll do it again next Thursday. Thanks for hanging out with us, hey?
Always my pleasure. Enjoy the conversation, guys. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you then.
You know it. Thanks, Kev. That's Kevin Woodley, our goaltending guru. That wraps up our goaltending power hour. He joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. He's Wes Gilbertson on Twitter, at Wes Gilbertson. Shan Virgie, Cam Hughes, our producers this hour. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour has been The Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.